International Al-Quds Day this year has coincided with Palestinians' Great March of Return, as well as Naqsa Day commemorations. This is in an atmosphere where many Arab countries seek to sell out their Palestinian brethren for the so-called deal of the century that they want to force upon Palestine. Add to this Trump's declaration of Al-Quds as the Israeli capital and the U.S. Embassy's relocation to the Holy City, and a picture of accelerated support for a complete Israeli takeover of Palestine emerges. Join me, Waqar Rizvi, as we discuss Palestine on this Al-Quds Day.
On the last Friday of the holy month of Ramadan, which marks International Quds Day, large crowds of Palestinians from all over the occupied West Bank headed to Qalandia military checkpoint north of Jerusalem Al-Quds to enter the holy city. At the checkpoint, Israel adopted stricter measures restricting movement of Palestinians.
Today, when people from all over Muslim world are holding rallies to support us and support Al-Quds, then the least to do as Palestinians is to flock to the holy city. On ordinary days, I'm banned from entering the city. However, regardless of the dangers that I might face and the strict measures, as well as the long journey, I'm entering Al-Quds.
Amid Israeli attempts to Judaize Jerusalem Al-Quds, Palestinians believe converging on the holy city on different occasions is the least they can do following the relocation of the U.S. Embassy. However, on Fridays during the holy month of Ramadan, Israel prevents men under the age of 40 from entering Al-Quds.
We must always go to Al-Quds and pray in Al-Aqsa. This will strengthen our steadfastness and send clear message that Al-Aqsa is very precious and that Al-Quds is a red line.
It's really amazing how every year on the last Friday of Ramadan, people from all over the West Bank try to enter Al-Quds despite Israeli strict measures and Israel's attempts to take over Al-Aqsa Mosque. People are not afraid. They say they are determined to defend Al-Aqsa and Al-Quds at whatever cost.
Some 300,000 Palestinian worshippers managed to hold the Friday prayers in Al-Aqsa Mosque on Quds Day.
Despite the recent U.S. and Israeli measures against the holy city of Jerusalem, Al-Quds, Palestinians insisted to mark International Quds Day by heading to the Al-Aqsa Mosque for prayers. They say it's a reminder that Al-Quds will always remain the eternal capital of their future Palestinian state. Mora Kandil for Press TV, Qalandia Military Checkpoint, South Occupied Ramallah.
Our guests for tonight's discussion are journalist and Middle East expert Ms. Hafsa Kara Mustafa, who is joining us live from London. And we're also joined by professor at George Washington University, Professor Nabil Mikhail, who is joining us live from Washington, D.C. Thank you both for joining us. Professor, I'd like to start with you, if I can. What do you make of the importance, Professor, of this year's International Quds Day rallies, especially with all that has happened in the past year? Professor, okay, it seems that we may be having some difficulties with our connection with there with Professor. Let me go to Hafsa.
No, I mean, the question is directed to me.
Yes, it was, Professor. I do apologize. I wanted to ask you, Professor, about what you make of the significance of this year's Al-Quds Day rallies.
It's an important event. It is the holiness of the city. And also, it is a strong desire that do not politicize the Jerusalem issue. Make the solution satisfactory to all the followers of all religions. It's important for Jews, important for Christians, important for Muslims. And let us hope that by next year that there will be a solution to the Jerusalem problem. It should not really be an issue that fuels more hatred. Jerusalem is where prophets, and prophets were people of peace sent by God. So let us work hard here as humans to make sure that the Quds Day, Jerusalem Day, is honored, is respected, is satisfactory to the followers of all religions, and violence should not come out of Jerusalem. And hopefully that message should be listened to by everyone. And I do apologize that when you directed the question to me, I assumed that you're asking the other guest. So please accept my apology.
No problem. Hafsa, I wanted to, in fact, ask you then, Hafsa, about Al-Quds specifically, because, you know, we look at the history, obviously, Hafsa, of Jerusalem, Al-Quds, Israel annexed East Jerusalem al-Quds in 1967. That's a move that most of the international community has not recognized. Israel says the entire city is its own, does not recognize any Palestinian claims to any part of that holy city. Then the U.S. comes in, Hafsa, and hands over the declaration, of course, saying that, you know, Jerusalem al-Quds is the capital of Israel, moves its embassy. What do you make of all that vis-a-vis what can be done about Jerusalem al-Quds?
Well, first of all, I'd like to say that obviously in ideal times and in an ideal world, it would be a city that is holy to all the Abrahamic faiths, and that was its status up until 1967, and under Islamic rule, it was always open freely to all the Abrahamic faiths. However, of course, under Israeli Zionist rule, that situation has changed. We know now for a fact, and as your report indicated, that young Palestinians are not allowed to visit. Young Palestinians under the age of 40 cannot travel to Jerusalem. And of course, it is a hugely politicized issue because the Israelis are using this holy city to actually impose their diktat on Palestine and further entrench their occupation and their deletion of Palestinian land, but also Palestinian culture, and of course, it clearly advertising their disrespect for all the other religions. So I think that this very much goes in line with what Israel has always done in the past. It continues to gnaw into Palestinian land and delete Palestinian identity and culture. This, of course, is a criminal act. But sadly, Israel has the aid and the support of the other criminal-in-chief, which, of course, is the American administration.
All right, so Professor Mikhail, I wanted to then ask you, Professor, because you're sitting in D.C., what do you make of what the Trump administration's decisions have been in the past year since he's come into office vis-a-vis Jerusalem al-Quds, you know, declaring it the capital solely, essentially, of Israel?
Very important question, very complex question, and it's a long requires a long answer. Let me just try to make the highlights. First, it has been a debate or a demand by U.S. Congress to move the American embassy to Jerusalem, and that was a long time before Trump. Second, there is a strong constituency in American politics, especially in the Republican Party, known as the Evangelical Christians, some sort of a Protestant faith that makes the renewal of spiritual life a demand, and also it interprets the Bible somehow literally. So they would say the Messiah, the second advent, will come from Jerusalem and the Jews should be there. So that's a very strong belief. Thirdly, also Trump has his own input. He elevated his son-in-law Jared Kushner to an important position. There is this idea floating as the deal of the century, although actually I would like to omit the word century from it because it is just some deal. And this might involve also a final or a quasi-final settlement over the holy city of Jerusalem. So I would assume that Trump wanted to take the first step to fulfill that long-term plan, or you can call it a strategy, of a deal between the Palestinians and the Israelis. It was actually accepted only by the Israelis, but not by the Palestinians. So it did not really modify anything, or it did not give any reward to the Arabs. I believe now that the Arabs and the Muslims should just request that also Jerusalem should be a capital for the Palestinian state. That's very important. One important thing I noticed is that the Ecumenical Patriarch Bartholomew from Constantinople said he represents like 300 million Orthodox Christians, and he said that he does not want the United States Embassy to be moving to mm-hmm. Jerusalem. So that was also disregarded by the Trump administration. So the question is how really to satisfy also Christians. That's very important. So the question becomes actually religious.
Right.
It's more complicated because religion is a very important affiliation for people's orientations in life. So I think the United States did not explain well enough why it moved the embassy, and the quote-unquote deal of the century has not been forthcoming. This is why it has become controversial and very much debatable in acrimonious way.
Okay, so Hafsa, you know, let's talk about this deal of the century a bit further if we can, because, you know, we know that famous quote of Mohammed bin Salman saying essentially the Palestinians should just, you know, accept the deal or just stay quiet. I'm paraphrasing, obviously, his quote, but it was quite a demeaning quote from in many Palestinians' point of view. What do you make of the deal of the century? Obviously, we don't know the exact details of it, but it seems that it's just being forced down Palestinians' throats.
It is, and it's very much coming from the Gulf Arabs. I'd like to specify clearly that what Gulf Arabs say and advocate does not reflect the opinion of all Arabs. Of course, most Arabs are profoundly disgusted both by the policies of the Saudis in relation to Palestine, but also in Yemen. So the idea that this is an Arab decision is slightly wrong. It is exclusively Gulf Arab oriented, and they do not speak for the entire Arab world. Now, of course, what they're doing is, and we've seen very recently, for instance, a wealthy Emirati businessman calling in an Israeli newspaper appealing for Palestinians and for all Arabs to abandon the Palestinian cause in favor of a relationship with Israel. Now, this, of course, is an absolute scandal, in particular at a time when Palestinians are being slaughtered on a daily basis, in particular at a time when Arabs and Muslims and Christian Arabs, of course, also have been humiliated with this decision by the Americans to actually extend a hand to a murderous regime that has absolutely no respect for Arab Muslim life in general. So this is something that should be rejected wholeheartedly, and I think it's very important to reiterate that it is not coming either from the entire Arab world or Arab opinion in general, but exclusively from corrupt Arab leaderships of the Gulf monarchies. This is where this is coming from. And these monarchies have expressed a Zionist tendencies for many, many years now, both in their policies against fellow Muslim countries and against fellow Arab countries. And I think the culmination of this pro-Zionist stance that they have adopted has actually been to encourage and to call for a recognition of the State of Israel.
Professor Mikhail, I wonder what you make of that, because, you know, Professor, we talk a lot about the Western countries and their policies vis-a-vis Israel, but what do you make of these Persian Gulf Arab monarchies, as Hafsa put it, and you know, their policies right now towards Israel? Are they essentially, Professor, abandoning the cause of Palestine?
I mean, I would say they are Muslims by faith, so they would recognize also the importance of Jerusalem for the Islamic faith they adhere to. I will not doubt anyone's faith. There is a commitment to help the Arab, there are a commitment to help the Palestinians by the Arabs, and that has been going on for 7 years. It varied in its strengths across the years according to circumstances. But I cannot deny that there could be truly an opening on the part of the Arab Gulf nations toward Israel, but in a very informal way. This is something that I can detect here from Washington, D.C., from also seeing some signals about it from reading the media sources as a researcher. The question is, will they bring the issue of Jerusalem when they discuss with the Israelis plans to open up a little bit? I think they should. And I would not really rule out invitations by the government of Israel to many Muslim delegations to visit Al-Haram al-Sharif or the Holy Sanctuary where the Aqsa Mosque is found and pray there. I mean, the Mufti of Egypt, the former Mufti of Egypt, a high Islamic scholar, visited Jerusalem himself. Will the Palestinians object? I would assume they would. So, and again, it will make things complicated. There is no final settlement of the issue of Jerusalem. But if just I am trying to be precise and answer your question, I am seeing and detecting signs of some opening between Israel and a number of Arab countries, including the Arab countries in the Gulf. And I'm quite sure that the discussion over Jerusalem will be found in that exchange.
Okay, so Hafsa, we've already, in fact, had such delegations, haven't we? We've had the Bahraini delegation visit Jerusalem al-Quds. It was not treated well by Palestinians on the ground. It was actually heckled, I believe, by the Palestinians around them. We've had, you know, others talk about these sorts of things. So the Emiratis have also spoken about delegations, at least. What do you make of what that would mean? Would that just be giving legitimacy again to Israel?
It would and it wouldn't. I think that it confirms the position of these Gulf Arab countries as being completely divorced from the Arab reality. I think the Palestinian cause remains very, very important for a majority of Arabs across the region and, of course, across the wider Muslim world. So the idea that Muslim nations are actually attempting to negotiate and endorse Israel in this way, and exclusively for money, really, because we've seen that, for instance, the Emirati recently spoke of business opportunities. So really, this is motivated by greed and nothing else, and just the idea of maintaining their privileges and their position with the US. So it's not even motivated by any form of principle or anything, which makes it all the more disgusting. And it would actually entrenches the divorce between that part of the Arab world and the rest of the region. I think, again, it's very much in line with what they'd done prior in Syria, very much in line with what they did in regards to Libya, and of course more recently in Yemen. It is only a natural trajectory that their last bastion of dignity has been to actually abandon the Palestinian cause. And I think this really clearly indicates that these corrupt leaderships, once again, are very much the bane of the region, and they should be rejected for everything they stand for. And sadly, I feel that now we should treat them, for the rest of the Arab world, the rest of the Muslim world that views Palestinian cause as important, they should treat these Gulf monarchies in the same way, and they view them in the same way that we view the Zionist regime.
Professor Mikhail, you know, it's interesting, while these monarchies are moving closer towards Israel, we have people in parts of the West who are moving further away from Israel. For example, we have, I'm just going to cite one example about one BDS move. On 25th of May, a majority of the Barcelona City Council, professor, called for a military embargo on Israel and called for the release of the 400-plus children who are prisoners in Israeli jails. That's been seen as a very significant move. It's called for the Spanish government to recognize its such decision. What do you think, professor, is pushing Westerners or people in Western countries to move in support of movements like the boycott, divestment, and sanctions?
This is a very good question. And again, it requires a lot of research and thinking, because you have to survey the attitudes of a lot of European countries. And even I can think of a Belgian member of the parliament also who made a very strong anti-Israeli speech recently. It depends actually on many factors. I believe there is a trend in European politics, especially from representatives of the left and more liberal traditions, to criticize Israel. This is one thing. It is basically the view by some Europeans that the Palestinians are being occupied, and you cannot have any serious discussion about the future of a certain people if they cannot really have some freedom. So I believe it is a tendency on the part of many European countries, and I would assume it is growing, although it is difficult to predict it, whereby they just are putting as the least point of understanding regarding the Palestinian-Israeli conflict is that Israel should end its occupation of the West Bank and its blockade of Gaza. And I would assume that we will hear more people from Europe, especially perhaps Latin America as well, asking for Israel to give independence to the West Bank. And then this should help some discussion between the Palestinians to form a Palestinian state.
All right, Hafsa, I wonder what you make of the successes of the BDS movement. You know, in the UK too, Hafsa, we have, in fact, the UK's National Union of Students Executive Committee. It's once again adopted that motion saying it stands in solidarity with Palestinians and supports BDS, but it added this year an amendment against anti-Semitism, separating, of course, Judaism as a whole and Jewish people from that of, you know, from Israel and criticism of Israel. You know, at one point in time, Hafsa, Israel would have laughed off BDS and did so for many years, saying it didn't have any impact. But now it seems that a lot of Israeli lobbying groups are very worried about the impact, aren't they?
Well, economically,
yes,
I don't think
is
BDS
also
is
Professor,
impacting
that's where Hafsa. Go ahead,
Israel's
Hafsa,
economy.
Yeah.
As I said, I don't think BDS as an economic factor isn't really impacting Israeli economy. However, I think on the public opinion front, which is extraordinarily important for Israel, it is achieving many, many successes. And it is doing that by indicating that Israel is a terrorist state and is an occupying regime. I think for many, many decades in Europe, and in particular as the Israelis were milking the Holocaust and the Second World War issues, they were portraying themselves as the victims in this situation. And in fact, because pro-Israel lobbies dominated the media, they managed to sell this narrative very easily to young audiences. However, today in the information age and with social media and with a far greater awareness among the European youths in particular, there is an understanding of how the situation is, which is in fact that Israel is the occupying force and the Palestinians are the occupied people and the victims of Israeli policy. So in that regard, the BDS movement has been very efficient in broadcasting this message. And I think because Israel was built on propaganda, it very much is very much afraid of being destroyed by propaganda itself. So it's the information that is broadcasted by BDS that worries more than the actual economic impact.
All right, we'll have to leave that as our final comment, but of course we do appreciate both your contributions to tonight's discussion. That was Ms. Hafsa Qara Mustafa, journalist and Middle East expert who had been speaking to us live from London, and we were also joined by Professor Nabeel Mikhail of George Washington University, and he had been speaking to us live from Washington, D.C. And of course, viewers, as always, we appreciate you joining us as well. Until next time, good night.